Welcome to the Peak Work Performance Summit, where we talk about scientifically proven ideas that make us smarter, healthier, more productive. My name is Ron Friedman, and my guest today is the world's leading authority on personal productivity, David Allen. David is the author of the international bestseller, Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. A new edition of Getting Things Done was released earlier this year, and if you haven't read it, it's certainly worth your while. I think it's even fair to say it's one of the best productivity books ever written. I began by asking David to assume I knew nothing about his work and hadn't read any of his books. What recommendations would he offer someone who simply wants to be more productive? Here's what he had to say.
We've uncovered unpacked a five-stage model about how do you get sort of your life, your head, your world under control. We didn't really make it up. I just started to recognize it. It's the five steps you use to get your kitchen under control, to get a company under control, to get a meeting under control. So basically, it's a very simple set of behaviors, which is to capture the stuff that has your attention, clarify exactly what it means, what you're going to do about it, if anything, organize the results in appropriate places, so that you can step back and review and reflect on the totality, essentially, of all of your commitments almost at any point in time, so that you can then objectively make a better intuitive judgment call about what to do and what not to do. Most people are still using their office as their head. You know, their head is a terrible office. It doesn't, you know, you'll be driven by latest and loudest if you're still keeping all that stuff and all of the nature of your commitments and your work in your head. So a lot of what the Getting Things Done methodology is about is simply unloading all that stuff out of your head, but not just unloading it. You also then need to apply a thought process to clarify specifically what these things mean to you and what you're going to do about them. And then your organization is just an organization of reminders and essentially building orientation lists and maps so that when you go to the board meeting, you have the agenda. When you're, you know, going to spend your weekend with your family, you know those things that you need to focus on. So basically building an external brain in a way. Uh-huh. So simple idea, but most people have a much more complex, intricate, varied life than they realize until they actually start to get down to it. They say, okay, wait a minute. What did I tell myself I would, could, should, need to, ought to do? So it's really starting to objectify that. So back to the simple answer is, yeah, just get your head empty. Write it down. Head was, you know, your head evolved over millions of years to, you know, to keep you alive on the savanna, you know, so that you could eat and not be eaten, you know, and basically it was designed to maintain about four meaningful things. That's about it. So new studies and research has proven your head's it's really bad at remembering. It's really good at recognizing patterns. Very good to walk into a room or look at a list and go, oh, that one, not that one. But to try to do that in your head, it's just silly. Just doesn't work that way. And most people are still doing a whole lot of their life that way. So Getting Things Done was really about how do I clear internal space? You know, you don't need time, you need room. And it doesn't take any time to have a good idea, but you do need room to have a good idea.
One of the things that I think is really interesting and unexpected about your book is that you start off with this very interesting comparison. You talk about how being good at your job in many ways is like being very good at martial arts. What's the connection?
What's that? What was that surprise? What was that unexpected thing? Oh my God, here's new input. I mean, during any 10-minute period in a work day, you could get an email from your grandmother. You could get FaceTime from your kid. You could have a client call and bitch about some problem. You could have a staff person about to break into tears. You recognize you need to take them lunch. That could all happen in 10 minutes. You don't think that's a martial art?
So it's really about being clear so that we can have that response time when we need it.
Well, what you don't want to do is over or under react. And the problem is most people take one meeting into the next. They take home to work. They take work to home in their head, as opposed to let me get closure, clarity on this. Let me put placeholders on this appropriately so that I can then not multitask, but rapidly switch without a big cost. And that's really a martial art. If you watch a martial artist fight four people at once, they don't actually fight four people at once. It's one at a time, which is very quick refocusing and no residue from one to the other. So, you know, what the military refers to as situational awareness. I need a clear head so I can see at multiple horizons at any one point in time, and I'm not over or under reacting to anything. And that really is, you know, the challenge these days with the the world that we're dealing with, the 24/7, you know, always connected kind of stuff, and the flood of potentially meaningful information coming at you is, you know, you can't just sit back and assume that life will be okay, assuming that you are engaged with all of those things, and all those things represent commitments that you've got and interests that you have.
Mm-hmm. So writing things down helps us stay clear and focused. Why do you think it has such a great impact on our ability to think?
I don't really know. You know, if the brain scientists really have done all the research in the last 10 or 15 years. And there's two brand new books out, one called the Organized Mind, another one called Brain Chains. And it's really the aggregation of a lot of the cognitive science research that's basically proven that your head's for having ideas, but not for holding them. So writing it down makes a huge difference. I've never met anybody in my life who at some point, you know, felt at least slightly overwhelmed and confused and sat down and made a list and felt at least a little more in control, a little more focused. But if anybody actually reverse engineered that, which I did, you'd never keep anything in your head the rest of your life, because control and focus are the two key elements of self-management or even organizational management. The only time you ever think you need to improve your time management or your prioritization or your organization is because something is not feeling as in control as it ought to, or you feel like something is not as meaningfully focused as it needs to be, you know, mainly you. And so those are the two elements there, but control and focus automatically happen once you start to externalize your commitments and take a look at them back from another altitude, but you can't do it in your head.
It's a great point. So recently in the New Yorker, you wrote, you were interviewed for a blog and you gave this opinion. You said that writing things down using pen and paper is in some ways superior to taking them down via email or using an iPad. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not a researcher about that either, but there's a lot of certainly anecdotal evidence. And now apparently some research evidence that the more physical you are with this stuff, the more you're kinesthetically involved with these things. You know, there's something that happens that in terms of the externalization that triggers, you know, another part of our psyche that's more mature and more cognitively optimal, if you will, you know, using some big words. But, you know, it just seems to be that way. I think, you know, I do both. You know, I capture stuff by, you know, email myself, tap myself notes from my iPad. But at the same time, you know, there is something about just the physicalness of it. I know a lot of high tech people that are actually going back to low tech in terms of even their list management, simply because they find that works more. Their brain can wrap themselves around this stuff much more easily. You can see the maps against each other. Here's all my projects, but then here's all the phone calls I need to make, and here's my strategic plan. That's a lot easier, actually, in a way, to see in physical space than it is in digital space.
Right. The other thing that often happens when you sit down in front of a computer or picking up your iPad is that you're inundated with distractions.
The rabbit trails can be infinite. Yeah.
Exactly. So one of the things that really resonated for me in your book is that you say, don't just list down the projects that you need to work on or the things you need to do, but make sure to think about what the next physical action is. So for example, if the taillight is out of my car, I won't just write taillight on my to-do list. I'll write call mechanic to make an appointment to fix the taillight. Why do you think that having the next physical action is so critical?
Well, probably the main reason people procrastinate is essentially feeling out of control. Like I don't know exactly how to step into this thing that I need to do. And if you don't get the thinking down to the next physical, visible activity required to do your taxes, to fire the person, to increase your credit line, to manage the vacation coming up on your, you know, on the holiday. If you don't get it down to the next physical action, some part of you is very likely to create huge phantoms of, you know, in this void of, oh my God, there's so much to think about. There's so much to plan. There's so much to do about all that. And you just freak yourself out. I mean, the people who procrastinate the most are the most sensitive, creative, and intelligent people, because they can think about their vacation or their taxes or firing somebody and, you know, in a quarter of a second generate, you know, gazillion negative pictures of all the horrible consequences if this thing is not done perfectly, and they just freak themselves out. So getting it down to the next physical action, it's called getting it down to a chunkable piece, something, pick up phone, surf web, see about, talk to spouse. You know, once you get it down to that level, there's a part of you that actually likes to engage and likes to sort of create wins at that level. And especially when it's about some bigger thing. So it's a way to get rid of the demons, essentially, of all the stuff that must be done. But in order to be appropriately engaged with any of your commitments, you must finish your thinking down to the next action level. It doesn't mean you have to plan it. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be all thought through in terms of all the detail. You just need to know what's the kickstart on this. Mom's birthday, is the next step something to pick up the phone and call my sister, or is it to surf the web for a possible present? And if you don't get it down to that level, there's a part of you that says, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? And this little monkey just jumps into your psyche and will wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning about something you can do nothing about. And once you park that stuff in there, you know, you'll give as much attention to the fact that you need cat food as you need to redo your strategic plan in there. That's why, again, externalizing all this stuff and keeping it out in front of you and keeping it current and clean and clear, you know, in some way, in terms of the inventory of all of your commitments, is just, you know, it can be transformative when people actually do that.
So if you've got a client presentation you're working on next week, you could write down client presentation, but you're saying, no, you don't want to write that next step of, for example, researching, maybe looking at previous presentations that you've done, maybe looking at the client's LinkedIn page or whatever. And that, in some level, makes us calmer about how to approach the project.
Well, it then makes you appropriately engaged. See, the big secret of getting things done is not about getting things done. It's about being appropriately engaged with your life. Are you appropriately engaged with that presentation? Are you appropriately engaged with your cat? Are you appropriately engaged with your life partner? Are you appropriately engaged with your health? It doesn't mean you have to be up out and doing and finishing all of that. It just means that you've clarified what exactly it is that you've committed to finish or change or handle about any of those things. And if you've parked the appropriate reminders that get you to do, make sure that the action will be taken at the right time and the right place. But that doesn't happen by itself. This is actually, it's a martial art. You actually have to train yourself to think about that way in that way. And you have to then park these things in appropriate places in a trusted way.
I can tell you after reading your book, I really did start using verbs in my to-do list. And I separated things out by weekend versus weekday for work versus life. And I know that in your writing, you talk about not really separating those things out, two things out, but really treating them as one unified whole. Do I have that right?
Well, in a way, you just want to be able to see whatever you want to be able to see as an orientation map wherever you are, so you can be optimally productive if you want to be. You know, in the old days, if people were doing paper-based bill paying and they just collected their bills during the week and kept them in a drawer or in a file or in a basket or whatever on their desk, and on Saturday paid their bills, they don't need to carry that around with them. They don't need to have that available to them, because they know that they have a trusted behavior and a trusted system that manages that. So they don't need to keep that around with them. However, if you have some phone calls you need to make and you're out, even if they're personal calls, but you're walking around on your lunch hour and say, hey, well, I could make some calls. You know, you're not optimizing your ability to move the needle on stuff that's meaningful to you when you happen to be in that context to do that. So it's really about, well, what's useful for you to be able to see at any point in time? So it's really about sort of understanding the ecosystem of your whole sort of life and engagements and all of your commitments, then being able to see the right maps at the right time that can then optimize your ability to be able to do that. Well, you know, Ron, the world has changed that we're, you know, for many of us, there's no distinction between work and play. It's all just whatever's next. There's no distinction between a home office or an office. They're all the same place. There's no, you know, there are none of those distinctions, which is in a way very cool. It's a great time to be alive because technology is allowing us to do that. At the same time, it's a terrible time if you don't know what you're doing, because you can get so wrapped around the axle around any of that and get sucked down a zillion rabbit holes, you know, and then feel terrible that you weren't doing probably what you should have been doing. So it you know, the good news is that it's challenging everybody to become a lot more of their own executive about their life, you know, than the previous times.
Right. Now, let's say, okay, so I've gotten all my verbs down. I've gotten my next steps written out, figured out what my next physical action is. What do I do next to make sure those things are actually getting done?
Well, you need to make sure you've got your whole, essentially your ecosystem, or you've got your maps about all the things that could, would, should, might need to be looked at any point in time. I mean, at the night, you know, the, you know, before I go to sleep tonight, I'm going to glance at my hard landscape for tomorrow. What are the things that'll die if I don't do them? So I know, I have an idea of that, have an idea of what are all the other things that are kind of pulling on me, or the things that have a lot of value if I actually can get them done in between whatever the things I have to do. And I just kind of tee that up. And then, you know, I'm a freedom guy. I'm into planning as little as I can get by with and being available for sort of my spontaneous, intuitive, well, here's what I feel like doing. I'm not sure why, but I want the freedom to be able to do that. But that freedom doesn't come free. That freedom only comes when I know what I'm not doing. So I need to be able to constantly refresh and recalibrate and relook at the inventory of all of my commitments, phone calls I need to make, projects I've got, what's coming up on my calendar, all that stuff. I mean, you don't go unconscious to all that. As a matter of fact, you need to engage with all of that in an appropriate way so that your mind can then go, okay, here's what I need to do right now. So it's all about getting comfortable about and being present with whatever it is that you're doing. But as I say, you can only feel good about what you're not doing when you know what you're not doing. So reviewing and then recalibrating against that. So when you know, back to your very practical question, look, once I get all those out of my head, once I decide all the next actions about those, and what are all the outcomes, i.e. projects that you're committed to finish about all those things, that's a very, very powerful operational inventory of your work. And I use work in the broad sense, anything you want to get done that's not done yet. So get tires on your car and handle your next vacation is as much work in my context as, you know, the strategic plan or increase your credit line or launch the ad campaign. So all of those things, that whole inventory needs to be reviewed regularly out of your head, looked at on a regular basis, and then, you know, trust your intuition about, you know, what to do and what not to do.
When you say regular basis, do you do it once a week, once a day, once a month? What is that?
Well, there's certain things, you know, if your calendar, you should be reviewing probably several times a day. You know, I didn't review mine as regularly as I needed to. That's why I kind of missed our timing on this thing to begin with. But, you know, come on, you teach what you need to learn the most. But it was really about, there are certain things I need to review. Basically, you need to review whatever you need to review to get it off your mind, as often as you need to get it off your mind. How often do you need to be reminded that you need cat food to get cat food off your mind? You know, how often do you need to be reminded about your strategic plan? And you know, for the company, you know, maybe that's monthly, you know, when's your revisit of that? As you know, one of the things we came up with was the weekly review, because probably the most needed operational review for most people's lives is once a week. Sit back and take a look at and bring up the rear guard and get current about your list and inventory of projects you're committed to finish, the action items about all those projects, make sure those lists are all complete and current. You reviewed past calendar and future calendar to catch all the, oh God, that reminds me's. You know, in other words, you've essentially looked at and reviewed your landscape. And that doesn't happen by itself. You actually have to build that in. If you're still letting yourself be pinged by emails and by interruptions and phone calls and running down rabbit trails, you know, on the web or social media, you will not do that. So building in regular reflection time, a 2-hour block once a week, is really critical for anybody to stay sane these days.
So 2-hour reflection block, what do you do with those 2 hours?
Well, you review all your list. You catch up all the inventory of all the stuff that you're keeping track of, and then use that time to step back and reflect, you know, from a little higher perspective. You know, it's forest management instead of tree hugging, you know, but we all have to hug trees. You and I are doing that right now. We're down in the weeds. We want to be able to be present here, focusing on what we're doing. But in order for us to be comfortable that this is all that we need to be doing right now, you know, not too long ago, you and I had both better have lifted up into the fire tower and looked around and said, okay, that's the tree to hug right now and not something else. And if you haven't been conscious about that, most people walk around with this, you know, gnawing sense of anxiety, you know, that there's something they might should be doing. They don't know what the hell it is. And it's gnawing and nagging at them. So not really fully present anywhere. They can't really relax with themselves because they haven't renegotiated all those inventories for themselves, uh-huh, you know, of their commitments.
So let's talk a little bit about email. You know, one of the things that you really focus on pretty clearly is how do we get our minds to quiet down so that we can be in the present moment? The average worker gets about 121 emails a day, and that number is expected to rise. There's no reason to expect it not to rise. What can we do to keep our minds focused and clear when we're constantly being bombarded with other people's requests?
Well, there's a little blink on most emails these days called unsubscribe. You know, first of all, use that, you know, get off of any of those lists that you can. Only get the stuff that you really want to be getting and need to be getting. And if you need to be getting it, hey, life's like that. That is your business. I've been on emails, you know, consistently and regularly and heavily since 1983. You know, a lot of people listening to this weren't even born then. Uh-huh. Right. And, you know, wow, how could we live our lives, you know, without the electronic ability to be able to be connected no matter where we are in space and time? You know, that's fabulous. So don't shoot the medium, but email is great. But if you're getting a lot of that, and given the nature of it, I want it, I need it, that's part of my job and life, then you just better be structuring your life to be able to manage those and empty that out, just like you empty your mailbox on a regular basis. And, you know, you need to get very, again, this is where the real martial artness of this starts to come into play. It's called, don't let yourself keep opening it and going, huh, and closing it up again. You know, you're going to have to open it up again and go, huh, and close it up again. And it's like, that is the, you know, excuse me, you know, that's a huge waste of your time and energy, you know, and a big drain on your psychic space. So learning to make quick decisions. What is this? Can I dump it? Do I need to just file it as reference? You know, is there something I need to act on this? So making those good executive decisions, as you know, the getting things done process, you know, we define that algorithm about what is it you need to decide about any input that is potentially meaningful to you. You need to decide its meaning. And so quickly to do that and then build a system, both in your digital world or wherever you're doing that, so that you can then park those things appropriately. So, you know, it takes most people 30 to 90 minutes a day just to stay current with that volume of incoming stuff, not to catch up on backlog. And most people listening to this have, you know, huge backlog.
Yeah. I mean, I guess where I'm coming from on this is I think that the system makes a lot of sense from the perspective of your own proactive things that you're trying to get done. So you get the ideas out of your head, and then you figure out what the next action step is. And then maybe you even put them on your calendar, associate a particular time of day with getting a particular action done. That sounds great. In the reality, in a lot of organizations, is you're being bombarded with email, and oftentimes it's not a list you can unsubscribe from, although I'm sure lots of people would like to unsubscribe from their manager's email or from their client's email or from, you know, just HR is constantly CCing all on new policies that may or may not be relevant to you. So, you know, I guess my question is, how do you stay proactive when you're constantly being attacked with opportunities to be reactive?
Well, to a large degree, that is our life. I mean, I've put a whole lot of things in motion for which I'm just responsive and reactive to them, because I put them in motion and they're moving me toward things that I want to get done. So there's nothing wrong with being reactive. I would call it responsive. You know, I'm just responsive to that stuff. I put it into motion, so I'm not ignoring it. Heavens no. Mm-hmm. You know, so I need to be responsive to it. And it could very well be that 80% of your day is just responding to things that you're committed to. You're involved in that project, so you're getting the project information and updates. You're responsive to your boss because you need to pay attention to his or her priorities. They will take precedence over yours no matter what, right? So, of course, life's like that. You know, if people keep complaining about the phone ringing, but their job is to answer the phone, they made a bad career choice. You know, so, you know, the one organization that never has fires and crises is the fire department. Right, they're organized for that. All they're doing is getting ready for the next surprise, right? Mm-hmm. That's all their work is, right? So people keep complaining about all that. I'm going, excuse me, grow up. You know, life is like that. You know, so what you need to be handling is dealing very efficiently and as a martial artist, all the stuff you can handle and manage, all you can put in place to be ready for whatever the next surprise is that's coming toward you. That's why when I'm not doing anything else, I'm cleaning up email to zero. I'm cleaning up my in basket to zero because there's a surprise coming toward me I can't see. And when that hits, how much of a backlog of unprocessed, potentially meaningful stuff do you think I want to have? Zero. No, it's never zero because there's always stuff coming in. But I want to maintain that as minimal an inventory as I can so that I have the freedom to be spontaneously responding to things without feeling like I'm letting anything fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah. So what I'm taking away from this is that we really need to be mindful of how much cognitive surplus we have, because if we want to be creative, we really need to have some quiet and some opportunity to really daydream and think ahead about our next big idea.
Clay. And the new, you know, a lot of the cognitive science that's now shown up recently is absolutely demanding that your brain rest. You must sleep. You must daydream. You must, in order to be able to maximize your cognitive process, because the cognitive process itself tires out. It is a muscle. So you've heard decision fatigue. You know, that's actually quite true. Your brain can only do a certain number of that kind of focused, you know, undistracted thinking well without having rest. So being able to rest and be able to do that. Now, if you're not implementing the getting things done methodology, it's hard to do either one. You're trying to focus on something and you keep thinking, gee, I need cat food. And then you're trying to rest and relax and be contemplative and reflective. And you go, oh God, I need cat food. Right. So any of these unmanaged commitments, little, big or indifferent, if they're not actually handled really well, then what happens is it denigrates your ability to optimize your cognitive process. And that's now validated. This is now scientific data. Now, I just sort of came across this after 30 years of on the street, you know, dealing with some of the best and brightest people implementing this methodology and watching how much difference it made. But now it's kind of nice. The scientists and the researchers and the academics are all going, wow, this is really true. it really does work that way.
Right. Right. You know, what's interesting is I read The Organized Mind, as you, the book you mentioned. And in fact, I think it's Daniel Levitan actually cites you as the solution to a lot of the problems that we face in everyday life.
Yeah. And Dan's a great guy. I was able to meet him. And, you know, he actually started writing the book before he had read mine. And when he read mine, he went, oh my God, you know, this guy actually came up with the same sort of thing. So we sort of all came to the same conclusions after all these different years through very different paths.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about you. You know, I think a lot of folks would just assume, because of the success you've had with getting things done, that you've been working on this your entire career. But as it turns out, you've actually had a very varied career. I think you mentioned you had 35 different professions by the time you were 35. Do I have that right?
Right. But, you know, come on, I stretched it a little bit. I just said, how many things have I actually been paid for? You know, my first one was at age 5. I was a magician, charged 5 cents for my magic show on the sidewalk in Palestine, Texas, you know, right where I was when I was 5 years old. So I included all of those, but it was a fun exercise to say, how many things have I actually done for money? And it was true that in a way, I didn't really know what I wanted to do out here in this world. I was more inner directed, sort of my own sort of spiritual and personal development interests. You know, I was a philosophy and then history major in college, and was sort of fascinated by enlightenment and consciousness and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I got intrigued by all that. So I then sort of launched on my own inner path. So mainly they don't pay people to go, you know, learn who you are and, you know, God, truth, and the universe. So I had to have jobs. So I went and looked around, and I didn't like to be bored, so I found some interesting things to do. And I had a lot of friends who themselves had their own vision about what they wanted to do. And I became a pretty good number two guy. So I helped a guy, you know, manage a landscape company. I helped a couple of friends start a restaurant. You know, I helped another guy, you know, with a moped distributorship. I helped another friend who had a service station and a car restoration business. And anyway, so, you know, I just wound up. And then I just come in and say, well, okay, what can we do that can improve this situation? And so I wound up just helping people sort of improve their own systems. One day I actually thought about, then I get bored. Okay, now I've improved the system, now what? And so then I'd change careers and professions and move on. One day I said, well, I guess they actually pay people to do that. They call them consultants, and they pay them money. You know? So I hung out a shingle in 1981 and created my own little consulting business. I said, okay, let me just show up and see if I can improve situations. Of course, that made me very hungry to find, okay, what are good models that I could really trust, that I could walk into somebody I didn't know in a business I didn't know, that could still improve the condition from their perception, you know, no matter what. And that's where I began to cobble together and uncover and discover and unpack these practices that became GTD.
Interesting. So that's
was
quite a path.
30 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Now quite a path.
It took me 25 years to figure out what I'd figured out, Ron. You know, I thought everybody else had already figured this out ahead of me. you know, all these executives are making a lot more money than I'd probably ever see in my life. I figure they must have figured this out. No. Matter of fact, the higher up and the more sophisticated people were, the more attracted they were to this methodology. It turned out to be that the most productive people were the most interested in this methodology already. Mm-hmm. You know? And then one day I had the big aha. Oh, it's because what this does is it relieves drag on your system. And the people most aware of drag are the fastest people. Mm. The people moving, people want to improve, people want to get something. And that doesn't mean work harder or sweat more. For a lot of people, especially the more senior and sophisticated they are and the older they are, improve means quality of life, get home earlier, be able to watch my kids without being on my smartphone, a lot of that level of stuff. And so that's where a lot of the real transformational kinds of testimonials we get from people implementing this methodology come from.
What's one thing that you now know about getting things done that you wish you had known when you started along this path?
It's about creating space and what people can do with room internally. And I sort of knew that I had an inkling of that, early on, because I was attracted to sort of space from the martial arts. Clear your mind so that you can then fight four people at once, and the strategic, what I now refer to as the strategic value of clear space. But I didn't know that. I wasn't that conscious about it to begin with. I knew it created the ability for people to be able to get more done with less effort and to be able to feel better and feel more on top of their game. But more of a subtle understanding of how powerful these techniques and these practices really are for people, especially as the world is bombarding them with more things that start to create static and residue in the system. And so, a lot of my awareness was as the world sort of became much more of that, and people had to deal a lot more with that, how useful and powerful these tools were and these practices were.
So to sum up, the ideas here are to take everything that you have in your brain, put it down, figure out what the next actionable steps are, make some time to go over your list so that you're not working on busy work, but you're actually working on the things that are important. And just simply having that practice in place can help you have a quieter mind and get more done.
Indeed. And, Ron, the interesting subtle thing about this is that all sounds sort of like reactive and passive in a way to try to manage your life. But the truth is, if you actually start engaging in those practices, it starts to trigger your access to deeper levels of your intuition, more inspiration, more creative thinking, more innovative thinking. There's a very positive aspect once you start to clear the deck of what naturally happens. And it's not like you suddenly clear the deck and have nothing on your mind. You clear the deck and it's like, hang on, now you're going to get really creative. As I say, the better you get, the better you better get. Because the better you get at this, the clearer the space is that you create. The clearer the space, the more potentially overwhelming, ambiguous and incomplete visions you will have, that you get inspired, to go produce. But come on, that's cool. At a certain point, you sort of get into the zen of the whole game. You go, okay, life just like that. But you keep clearing space. You keep having more and expanded and more sophisticated and sublime, things you're committed to do. And it's a neat game to play.
Interesting. One final question. What can you do if you're a manager or a leader? You recognize the value of these techniques and you want more people around you using them. How do you get them familiar with some of these practices? How do you get them using them in their everyday work?
You need to do them yourselves first. As you start to manifest this and model these behaviors, it automatically has an osmotic effect all around you. I mean, if you're responding to emails within 24 to 48 hours, people feel a little embarrassed if they don't, especially if they report to you. And it's not about sort of legislating some new thing. It really is. GTD is really nothing but just good business practice. Look, if you reported to me, Ron, and you showed up in my office, say, hey, Ron, give me a list of all the projects I've given to you right now that you're working on, because I have some other cool things I'd like to give you, but I just want to see what your inventory is. If you can't produce it, you're fired. Or, hey, Ron, hey, why don't you read this book? You might feel a little better about what's on your plate. So it's not about any one particular thing. It's really about building this lexicon of practices about outcomes and actions. What are we doing about the things we're committed to? Are we really real about what we're talking about? If you just, we've watched whole cultures change in, if meetings start by saying, what are we trying to accomplish by what time? and you don't end discussions in meetings without saying, so what's the next action? Who's doing that? Well, come on. And, you know, most people around the world, in even in the best companies to work for, you know, that we've done a lot of our work within, they all go, oh, God, you've been here. Boy, we could really use that. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are very common sense, common kinds of things, but you know, common sense does not mean they're commonly done. And so learning to just starting to use the vocabulary, using these behaviors, using and then expecting, you know, that people apply these practices and behaviors and awarenesses, it can make a huge difference. And of course, give them all my book. That'll help.
All right. Well, that's a tip anybody can use. Get David's book. David Allen, thank you very much for being part of this. You've been great.
My pleasure, Ron. Thanks.